Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Craig Buehler as my special expert guest. Dr. Buehler received his Doctor of Chiropractic degree in 1978 from Western States Chiropractic College in Portland, Oregon. After graduation, Dr. Buehler completed a postdoctoral fellowship at the University of Utah School of Medicine in the physiology department, where he focused on motor physiology. While attending chiropractic college, Dr. Buehler had the opportunity to work and study with the late Dr. Alan Burdell during the development of what became known as clinical kinesiology. Since then, Dr. Buehler has expanded the research on additional muscles, including the muscles of the cervical spine. Dr. Buehler served as the team chiropractor for the Utah Jazz basketball team for 25 years, during which time he was instrumental in creating the lowest player missed games due to injury rate of any team in the NBA. In addition, he enjoyed a successful private practice in Salt Lake City for 20 years, and in June of 2002, he established the AMIT Clinic in Kaysville, Utah. Dr. Buehler has lectured nationally on muscle testing and athletic injuries and has published numerous research papers and articles on motor physiology and muscle testing. Good morning, Dr. Buehler, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Well, good morning.
Thank you so much for the time. What was it about chiropractic medicine that originally attracted you as a young man, and what has kept you in the field for so long?
Well, I ran track for the University of Utah, and I sustained an injury that just plagued me every year that I ran. At the end of my junior year, it got so bad that I could hardly walk, let alone run. I tried all the modalities in the training room, and I'd seen orthopedic surgeons and tried the different modalities there, injections, and I could never get anyone to give me a diagnosis other than tendonitis. So during the WAC outdoor time trials, I ran my fastest time, but when I finished the race, I was in so much pain I could hardly walk, and because I couldn't compete, I lost my scholarship, so I dropped out of the U, and a number of years later, I went to a chiropractor for migraine headaches because I'd had those my whole life. Of course, I could never get any results medically there either. And I had been told through my life that chiropractors were quacks and they should be avoided, and so I did. But somebody had suggested I see a chiropractor, and so I had no other options, and I tried it. And I was pleasantly surprised because he evaluated me in a way no one else had. He defined the source of my migraines, but also the source of my foot pain, which had been the injury that I'd sustained. And the first treatment, I got off the table pain-free for the first time in 5 years, and I realized there was more to chiropractic than what I'd been told. And so I started looking into it as a career, and the more I looked, the more impressed I got. I found out it was a four-year post-grad course, had been for years. It wasn't a six-month mail-order class that my medical doctor told me about. It was like the spirit moved me, and it was, this is what I was to do. So I applied to chiropractic college and went to Western States.
So since that time now, you have really put a dent in the field. You've made your mark, and I was reading your website with a lot of interest. By the way, I compliment you on the information that you have there. It's explicit, it's deep, and it's well written. Now, maybe we could talk about this advanced muscle integration technique. First of all, is this your technique? Did you originate and pioneer this, or have you built on the work of the shoulders of giants, more or less?
Built on the shoulders of giants. It started with Kendall and Kendall, two physical therapists who published a manual on muscle testing. Muscle testing is used across the board, physical therapists, neurologists, MDs, and chiropractors. Dr. George Goodhart, a chiropractor from Detroit, Michigan, took Kendall and Kendall's work and applied it to chiropractic and discovered relationships between muscles and organ and glands and reflex centers within the body. And that started what was called applied kinesiology. Alan Beardall was one of the original diplomates in the applied kinesiology group. And Alan was a distance runner, a nationally ranked distance runner, and he saw a lot of distance runners. And the applied kinesiology worked great, but the problem was as soon as the athlete went out and started to work out, the problem would come back. And Dr. Beardall got really frustrated about that and said, you know, we shouldn't have to keep doing the same thing over and over again. So he began to evaluate other techniques out there in the alternative world, and he began to integrate them into his practice with these athletes that he was treating. And each technique that he would pull in and add, his results got a little bit better, a little bit better. When he added the acupuncture component, his results went to a whole new level. It was like the final piece to this puzzle. So he found that there was an acute injury that he couldn't correct in a short amount of time. I mean, I'm talking about a day or two, and that was what was termed clinical kinesiology. Alan was killed in an auto accident about 30 years ago in England, and so I've continued to expand it and develop it to what we're using today. And I had the unique opportunity to challenge the work at the elite level, at the NBA, the NFL, U.S. ski team. It's been amazing what we've been able to accomplish when you compare it to other systems in the sports medicine field. It makes a lot of those things obsolete, and it's just, it's fun for what we do with athletes. That's what kept me in the field, was the fact that we're getting such amazing results with athletes and people who want to stay active. Where all of the systems fail, this succeeds. It's pretty exciting.
Yes, it is. It sounds wonderful. As you know, some people in the medical field aren't really concerned about results. They're more concerned about whether or not you stray from policy.
Right.
Now, the issue with muscle testing has suffered its own form of criticism. There's people that don't understand it, and they watch someone perform it, and they automatically think there's something wrong with it, or a form of quackery, almost like chiropractic medicine, I guess, from the point of view of the naysayers. But maybe you could give us just a little bit of insight as to how muscle testing works and how you have discovered it to be so helpful in your practice.
Well, muscle testing is probably the most abused technique in the alternative healing arts, and so much of it's manipulated, and many of your listeners have probably experienced that. When somebody tests muscles, they feel like the person's applying more force for a weak response and less force for a strong response. That's been defined as what's called the idea motor phenomenon, which has to do with the attitude of the examiner influences the patient by manipulating the forces applied to the muscle to create either a strong or a weak response. And I saw that early on in my career and recognized that the only way for this to become science-based was to create a system that you could objectively define the forces applied in a muscle test. So I developed what was called a force transducer associated with Hogan Health Industries in Draper, Utah. And that was marketed under the Hogan FET system brand. And then JTEC, another company, took that technology and promoted it internationally. So the tool worked to quantify the amount of force applied against time. And so we basically standardized muscle testing. There's a criteria that has to be met in order to be an objective finding. And what's been interesting is you give the technology to somebody and say, okay, test the muscles using the transducer, and you'll actually see them applying more force for a strong response and a lot less force for a weak response. So people use muscle testing to sell vitamins and magnets and all kinds of products. But what we've attempted to do is objectify it so that we find the aberrant function, we evaluate the force against time, and then we treat and go back and reevaluate. And we see dramatic change with that kind of a standardization. And that, to me, that's going to revolutionize the whole field of muscle testing, because it will show the true charlatan approach and then objectify the neuroproprioceptive response of muscles, which is found in medical circles. And the distinction that we've discovered is that there are two types of muscle testing. There's the brake testing, which is utilized by a neurologist and physical therapist. You ramp your forces until you break the muscle. That's basically looking at the integrity of the strength of that muscle. The type of muscle testing that I use is more of a neuroproprioceptive response testing, where you're looking at the subtleties of the response of a muscle to an applied force over time, which is a more subtle evaluation of the integrity of that nervous system connection. The force transducer that we market actually shows that. and that's what really...
So we should think of muscle testing as a reliable method of diagnosis, like it's a diagnostic test. It doesn't heal anyone in itself. We use that to then apply the next step?
Yeah, but the first step is you've got to quantify it so you're accurate every single time. But then what we've done is taken it way beyond that in that we've developed muscle tests for every single muscle in the body. And by doing that, we can go through an athlete and define their positions of instability. And once we define that, we can predict whether injuries are going to occur. And the therapy that's been developed actually reactivates that muscle back into the nervous system. So you start with a muscle that may only be able to handle 8 pounds of force and hold it for half a second without breaking. You treat that, which takes about 10 minutes. You go back and retest, and you'll take that muscle to 40 pounds of force for a full 3 to 4 seconds without breaking. And we do that consistently. So it makes a huge difference in that we take an athlete that's broken down and in pain and difficulty in training, define them, and then correct all those faults, and their performance goes to a whole new level. And that's been the miraculous thing, is performance goes to a whole new level simply by turning muscles back on, which is kind of the idea that a muscle inhibits is kind of a unique concept that medical people don't really consider. Physical therapists are looking at a phenomenon called arthrogenic muscle inhibition, which occurs when a joint is inflamed, injured, or damaged. They found that any muscle that attached to that joint or cross over the joint become inhibited. And it's a real challenge in their rehab process post-surgically because they 6 months of therapy, rehab therapy, and the patient still can't contract a quad. So they've coined this arthrogenic muscle inhibition to define why, but they don't know what to do to correct it. And this system corrects it.
What comes to mind immediately is all of the men and women I've met in my own athletic career and in the gym for decades who are always wondering where the source of the problem is, you know, the rotator cuff, the muscle, the shoulder. Everyone has difficulty isolating where the problem is. And so this is really pinpointing that, which is just an incredible advantage, as you know. So this sounds wonderful that you've taken the time, almost like, you know, Hahnemann himself in homeopathy, spending all that time, years, figuring out those provings. You've put that time and energy into isolating every fiber in the body. That's amazing.
It's been an interesting process because the body leads you there. It tells you what's wrong. And, you know, a patient comes in and says, my shoulder hurts. You say, okay, what movement causes your pain? And they show you. If you know your anatomy, you know exactly what muscle's responsible for that movement pattern. So you test it. It's weak and painful. That's the source of their pain, because if a muscle is overloaded beyond its ability to handle a stress, either because of lack of conditioning or because the trauma is too severe, the body has a built-in protective mechanism that shuts the muscle down proprioceptively. So the small nerve centers in the attachments of the muscles trip just like a circuit breaker. Once that happens, the muscle will still fire under passive range of motion, but if you load it, it'll give way. If you keep loading it, you get pain at the attachment. So what the central nervous system does is it computes an adaptive strategy by using the muscle next to it to compensate for the fact that the muscle isn't working properly. And that becomes your new movement pattern. So we go from one imbalance to the next, and before long you've got an area there's nothing left to adapt with, and that's when you end up with chronic pain, the capsulitis, the tendonitis, the arthritis-type symptoms. So the therapy allows us to reactivate all those circuits so that the muscle comes back online to the central nervous system, and now your rehab actually becomes productive, because so many people have surgery, which is successful, but when they go into the rehab, they can never seem to get past a certain point. And the reason for that is those muscles have become inhibited. Once we turn them back on, the rehab just accelerates. And that's the beauty of this work and the concept that a muscle can actually inhibit to protect itself initially in the injury.
What is your opinion on the concept of muscle memory? People often refer to this as if the muscle fibers themselves can remember the action of the past. And we've seen the athlete come back, get back into shape very quickly, and they always claim it's muscle memory. What are your thoughts on that?
It's all tied into the central nervous system through the proprioceptive system. You know, the central nervous system, the brain, brainstem, spinal cord, nerve roots, But then you get into the fine sensories, the proprioceptors within all the different tissues, and they feed into the central nervous system and create those movement patterns. And I think a reason why a lot of the reflex points that we do are so effective is you basically reinitialize those proprioceptors back into the circuitry of the nervous system. Those patterns are already entrained, and so it doesn't take much for those to reactivate, and boom, you're right back to where you were before your injury. That's why I think rehabilitation accelerates so much when we do this work, because you're not giving a person anything they don't already have. You're giving them access of the things that they've already acquired. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much. It's a nice way that you present the pathway for my mind, like cognitively, because I find that most students have difficulty explaining what they've learned in the real world to their clients. A lot of our students are personal trainers. Many of them are health food store retailers or health professionals. Real mixed bag. So this is just wonderful information. Now, with that real live application, that working with the Utah Jazz, 25 years basketball, first of all, basketball as a sport, does it present uniqueness in terms of injuries to athletes that are maybe somewhat different than, say, baseball or football? Or are they pretty much the same? And what has your experience been with common types of injuries? People that maybe are listening who are working with people that do play basketball.
Well, I think the uniqueness of basketball is the tremendous number of games that are played during a season compared to other sports. There's just a lot more stress on the body, and you know, they condition for it. I took Bill Romanowski to a basketball game years ago. He was in town. We were playing the Lakers, and at halftime, he turned to me and says, "Bules," he said, "I have a whole new respect for John Stockton." I says, "Why?" He says, "Because he's setting picks on Shaquille O'Neal. He's getting hit as hard as I do on the field, and he's not wearing pads." And I'd really never thought about it like that before. But when you really look at what those guys go through in the key or in the on the court, they're being hammered without pads. So their bodies take a real beating. You know, the conditioning has a lot to do with preventing injuries. But, you know, one of the most common injuries are sprained ankles and or jumper's knee, patellar tendonitis. In fact, patellar tendonitis is probably the most common reason players retire from the game. You know, just a lot of pounding, a lot of jumping and stressing those patellar tendons. But the reason that that happens is because the quadricep complex becomes inhibited. And again, if a muscle inhibits and you stress it anyway, it inflames the attachments. So getting kneed, falling on your knees, I mean, there's so many things that can cause the quadriceps to shut down. But the key to injury prevention is proper training, conditioning, and proper nutrition, and maintaining the integrity of the spine and the nervous system and the integrity of the muscle system. And that's why the Jazz had the lowest injury rate. I mean, we had 2 years where we only had 11 player miss game to injuries for the whole season. That's staggering. We integrated good medical care, good trainers, but the key was this work, because we didn't allow players to break down. And if they did get hurt, oftentimes I had them back within 10 or 15 minutes, or for sure the next day for a game, when you're playing back-to-back games, which shocked the players because, you know, they come into the team with the experience of standard medical care for injuries, which if you sprain an ankle, it's 5 to 6 weeks. They would get treated by me, and they'd be back playing the next day. It was shocking to them how fast they could come back. So those are just some of the things that I've discovered during my tenure with the Jazz.
Have you seen an increase in the violence in sports over the years since you started? Basketball is supposed to be, quote-unquote, a non-contact sport. I played a little bit in high school. Mm-hmm. Certainly loved to play one-on-one with my friends. Nobody wants to hurt each other. But do you see that element coming out in professional sport more so because of the big money and the absolute essential need to win at any cost? Is there a push, a pressure on the athletes to suck out of themselves or do things they wouldn't normally do? Have you seen evidence of that?
To a degree, yeah. We've seen an increase in player missed game due to injury rates year after year after year, as far as an average. We did a study that we're trying to publish right now 25-year MBA study, one of the interesting things that we found was that we've seen a gradual increase across the board in number of player misgamed and injuries. In college basketball, we saw a flat line. We don't see that. So we don't know whether it's because of the larger contracts, players are more apt to sit out more games to make sure they're ready to play, whether they're having more injuries, which there's a some trend that shows that as far as basketball. Now, as far as football, that's a whole different story because these guys are faster, they're bigger. I think they hit harder. Look at all the concussions, the post-concussion complications with the NFL that's, you know, being showcased now, rightly so, because of the trauma, the multiple concussions these guys sustain. So basketball, they don't have the protection of pads. When you're a football player, you got the protection of pads. You're going to hit other guys a lot harder because you can sustain more. But I do think that with training and bigger size in athletes, the fact they're faster, you have more risk of injury than, say, 20 years ago.
Right. Now, you made a comment about nutrition being essential to understand and apply. What is your concept of good nutrition? You ask one person what their idea of good nutrition is, and they might include some Kellogg's Pop-Tarts or Cheerios for breakfast.
Well, they're fortified. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what else do you need? Now, that was the thing that really shocked me about dealing with the medical staffs, is their attitude is, look, you're producing expensive urine by taking all those supplements. Just eat a well-balanced diet, and you're fine. Well, first off, what constitutes a well-balanced diet? Two, if you do eat a well-balanced diet, most of the foods you're consuming are depleted in nutrients because of all the years of agriculture as planting on the same ground. And the demand has gone up, especially with athletes. And so that whole concept's ludicrous, that you just have to eat a well-balanced diet. John Stockton played 19 years in the NBA. Bill Romanowski played 17 years in the NFL as a linebacker. You see athletes who have longevity, they're doing something different. My question is, what are they doing different? And if I were an owner of a team, I would be wanting to find out, what are these players that have such long careers doing differently than everybody else? Stockton didn't believe in nutrition early on in his career until I started to educate him and show him the difference in his function when he was supplemented versus when he was not. Bill Romanowski had a tackle box. He had four trays. The first tray was for in the morning when he got up. The second tray was before workouts. The third tray was after workouts. And the fourth tray was in the evening. You know, he used labs to determine the cell membrane levels of vitamins or minerals. It got down to the tissue content of nutrients to kind of custom make what his body needed. And so nutrition has become a real science, and one size doesn't fit all. But I found through my career that the closer you get to whole food concentrates, the better off you are, because there are vitamins that haven't been discovered yet that, if they haven't been discovered, they can't be synthesized. And the body processes synthesized vitamins differently than naturally occurring vitamins. And so there's a lot of products on the market are cheap raw materials to improve profit. They don't pull the reagent residues out because it's more expensive to do. And so you have to be really careful about the kinds of vitamins and supplements you buy and where you buy them. Fish oils are a classic. I mean, there are, I think, four or five grades of fish oils. Cheaper grades, you run the risk of having contaminants in. The pharmaceutical grades have been distilled and all those contaminants removed. So people will take supplements thinking they're helping their body, and on one hand they are, and on the other hand they're increasing their toxic burden. So those are all key nutritional issues that people really need to look at.
And ultimately, we are left with kind of a self-regulatory element in this area, because we're not going to get this from convention, the medical establishment. People wait until they're sick. They go see a doctor. They're basically eating out of a family bowl that is mostly refined, processed. We have some of those same issues, you know, here in Canada as America, but America is kind of perceived as the country of consumerism, and there's evidence of consumption leading to high, high levels of obesity, and it doesn't seem as if it's improving. It seems as if it's getting worse. But in the athletic model, what we have discovered is that there's high numbers of athletes that come into sport that carry the same framework of mind. They're eating that refined processed food. They've been told, I was told, that I would just burn it off. And of course, I learned that it burned out my neural circuitry and damaged me. And fortunately, I was taught by a naturopath. So do you give counsel when you're applying your technique as a chiropractor? Do you also discuss on a personal level nutrition, food, that kind of thing, dietary supplements with your patients? How do they get informed?
Well, it's all part of a process. As I'm treating them, I'm talking to them about nutrition. And if we treat a muscle, and let's say the patient comes in the next appointment and the muscle didn't hold, it's aberrant again, I don't treat it again. I go deeper to find out why. And it may be that there's an organ or a gland that's under stress that needs nutritional support, or there might be a particular vitamin or mineral that they're deficient in. And I figure out what that is and give it to them, the muscle comes back online. So the body will display gross nutritional deficiencies eventually. But I talk to them about just general concept of diet and nutrition. I talk to them about the carbohydrates and how detrimental they are to the body, and primarily the genetically modified grains and the high fructose corn syrup that's so destructive. And just a little bit here, a little bit there to try to move them from what they've grown up with to where they need to go to really be healthy. But if you look at the food pyramid, everything at the bottom of the pyramid's subsidized product by the government. So the pyramid needs to invert. There's a great book out called Wheat Belly that's a real eye-opener.
Yes.
So I try to steer them into reading some books to educate themselves. And it's always, why didn't anybody ever tell me this? I didn't know that. So, well, yeah, you don't, because MDs get no training in nutrition, period. So where are you going to get your information? From commercials. Build bodies 12 ways. Eat Wonder Bread. You know, you get a Fruit Loops fortified with vitamins and minerals. It's like, what? So, you know, the idea that eggs are bad for you, that was promoted by the food industry to market their egg substitutes. And got to get away from butter and animal fats and go to the trans fats and the vegetable oils. And we did that, and our cardiovascular rates went through the roof because that perpetuated the inflammatory cascade. Now people are starting to wise up, and butter's healthy, and olive oil and all those things, are coconut oil's great for you. And it was an interesting statement by C. Everett Koop, who was a past Surgeon General of the United States years ago. In a speech, he said that 85% of all health problems in America are the direct result of dietary abuses and deficiencies. Think about that. 85% of our health care issues could be cleared up simply by changing lifestyle and cleaning up diet. But the pharmaceuticals don't like that, because if people are healthy, they don't buy their product. So the marketplace really is not supportive of people doing anything different than what the status quo is, unless they get tired of being sick and tired and they shift out of that model.
Yes, absolutely. And it's difficult to share the truth with people that are still stuck in that conventional mindedness. Dr. Buehler, our time is gone, and what a wonderful amount of insight and information you've provided. Really, what you said stood out, just what you said recently about talking to your patients while you're helping them. You know, this is what I like to teach our students to do, like if you're a trainer or working with a person as a professional, talk to them, expand, get into that nutrition. That is beautiful. What is your website address, please?
It's www.amitmethod.com.
Great. And I watched some wonderful videos of you on YouTube and online, and I would encourage all of our students to do the same for some real blood and guts, a great matrix of information that is real and practical and extremely authentic. I find your approach very authentic and real, so I really want to commend you for the work that you've done and helping us to perhaps follow in your footsteps.
That's great. I'm going to be putting up a new website next week or so. they go on the website, know that within a week or two, there's going to be a new website with more information, better details. So, but I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your folks.
Yes, we always find it useful and highly beneficial to connect with people of the same frame of mind who are on side searching for truth and looking for better ways to improve everyone's health and wellness. Prevention is the key, as you well know, Dr. Bueller. Well, Dr. Bueller has been my special guest on this edition of SNU. He's a very well-known chiropractor and cemented into the framework and ground substance of doing great work in helping athletes and people expand their consciousness and find health and wellness for themselves and on a professional level as well. Dr. Bueller, we thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Present his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.